architects, contractors, and officials that were involved here. Where the influence comes from, one will have to figure out. If one looks at the ATIU report on page 6, paragraph 14, it reads as follows. It would not be unfair to observe that the appointment of the private professional team coincided with regular changes to the scope of the upgrades to be affected and obviously the costs. The private professional teams were not only allowed to operate without any effective supervision by control of the DPW professionals, but also by and large played a decisive role in the choice of the firms who were appointed as security consultants and contractors. Now this is important. Some of the contractors who were chosen had also been hired by the Zuma family to effect the private improvements to their homestead. The DPW made the appointments officially and without proper compliance with its supply chain management. Was this purely coincidental? Can we just blame lowly paid DPW officials for having done this? Or was there this question of influence? Honorable Mulder spoke about early on about the Honorable President knowing about Nkandla and knowing about some of these things. He answered a number of questions in Parliament. He made a number of statements on the Nkandla issue. And one wonders whether or not there was influence. But I'm sure if we invite these officials to this committee, they will themselves tell us whether they were influenced, and if so, by whom, or whether they did this of their own best. Honorable Kwai also spoke about figures. Some figures were being bandied about, 10 million and things like that. And I agree, you will need to quantify these figures. But one would like to know how the SIU on page 7 quantified the figure of 155,324,000. The data experts engaged by the SIU estimate that these changes were not lawfully authorized. Now, who are these experts? How did they come to this figure? We need to know how they came to this figure. Because if they are good in what they did, we may need them to quantify the extent to which the Honorable President may be liable for improvements made to private property, which would be unjust enrichment. Chairman, but I think a moot point later on is going to be the President indicating that public protector is merely an ombud and the powers of the public protector. Now, there are differing views on the powers of the public protector, and we see that different legal experts give us different views. But whatever view comes up, I would like to contend, Honourable Chair, that the public protector, in compiling this report, did a thorough job. The recommendations were very fair. In fact, the recommendations were reasonable. And we cannot see why the Honorable President does not accept liability for a portion of the improvements that were made to private property. There's a reference also in the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence report about state property vis-a-vis private property. And they say 52% of these improvements were on state property. We'd like to know how they designate that 52% to have been improvements put on state property. Are they title deeds? What kind of state property is there when the Nkonyama Trust Board has jurisdiction over these, all these properties in this KwaZulu-Natal areas in terms of the Act? But finally, Chairperson, we believe that there is no way that the Honorable President can say that he was not aware, or that he cannot accept the liability, which has to be quantified, and reasonably so by the National Treasury, and where the public protector has suggested. Thank you, sir.
Honourable Beerman.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe just to get some of my colleagues will deal with issues raised just before tea break and so on. I just want to maybe come back again to the report, because I believe that is really our focus today, and not making sound bites. Media. Now, the big issue in all of these reports are the decision creep in terms of approving updates in relation to the president or the president that's in office. Now, it's quite clear from, if you read through the report of the SIU, there's 10 steps that must be taken in terms of approving such a problem. Let's go just to it, because that I think to a large extent will focus. debate. Now, the candidate will have 2,000 to be on their chair and spoken to the SIU report. Number one, there should be a request from the president for the presidency. Number two, an evaluation by SAPS based on threat analysis by the State Security Agency, SSA. Thirdly, the formulation by SAPS and SSA of proposed security measures. Then, a submission to the Interdepartmental Security Coordinating Committee, ECC for the technical assessment. Then, a DW's cost assessment of proposed structural measures submitted to SAPS. Then, six, SAPS advised the Minister of Safety and Security of measures cost. Seven, the Minister approves the measures and communicates this to the President or Presidency. Eight, the President or Presidency communicates the approved measures to SAPS. And 4.9, SAPS submits measures to the DPW. And then 4.10, the DPW Minister approves cost of the structural measures. And I think that's the argument that we have put forward this afternoon, that in most instances, that decision tree was not followed. And we are saying that's one of the issues that we must really discuss to ensure that in future, that the decision tree is followed to the letter, and to ensure that those issues are dealt with. Now, just with regard to the decision tree, I think that will also maybe inform members before we make certain assessments and evaluations to look at that. It's quite clear from the report as well from the SIU that of those 10 steps, only two were followed. Only two. If you go to page 240 of the SIU report. It says, as pointed out, Chapter 6, the Cabinet Memo requires 10 separate discrete steps. Of these, only two were taken as required. Only two. SAPS assessments and the cost estimate by DPW. So, what is material? And it takes care of some of the issues raised before T. In particular, and I'm quoting from page 240, 34.1, the President did not request the security upgrade. That's material. 34.2. No submission was made to the ISCC to conduct a technical assessment. 34.3. No approval of the designs or cost by the Minister of Safety and Security. And 34.4. No approval of cost by the DPW Minister. So it's quite clear if you look at the decision tree, the process was indicated by my other colleague was fatally flawed. If they stick to this decision tree, we wouldn't have these problems that was indicated in all the reports, and it's quite interesting as well on page 239 that the SIU indicated that we pointed out there that among members of SAPS, say for being aware that the cabinet member required them to undertake security assessments and draw up the requested report, there was general ignorance of what their role was and indeed the procedures that the cabinet member described in respect of proper authorization for implementation of the identified security requirements. As a result, neither the approval of the Minister of Safety and Security for upgrades and the cost to be expended, nor the approval of the DPW Minister for the approval of the cost was sort of delayed. And very interestingly, it relates to DPW. The report indicates, we also pointed out that DPW officials too were not familiar with the regulatory measures. In fact, they appeared to labour under the misapprehension that the upgrading was to be effective in terms of the ministerial handbook. Before outlining observations about how the DPW meeting to the security service provides to take the upgrade is necessary to make an observation of the implications of the failure of the SAS and the DPW to comply with the provisions of the cabinet member. So there was a spectacular failure of those institutions to stick to the decision tree, and the chairperson. And again, if we go later to recommendations, how can we as Parliament or as committee advise Parliament on the way forward? We really would have to look at how can we strengthen this decision to ensure that there's compliance with the relevant regulations and also that the officials who are trusted with also take care of that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to add to what my colleague himself has said and note quite clearly in the SIU report the role with which the President is being dealt with. Firstly, I think it's important to note the mandate of the SIU report as it relates to what the President this part, what the president has said are you to investigate, vis-a-vis what the public protector asked was us to investigate. What's key and what is noted in the SIU report is that in the initial stages, there was a clear liability given to the president. That's in the initial phase. As the project continued, it then, the public debt increased while the president's debt decreased. So in other words, if the project was to continue much longer, the public would then continue to owe the president even more, because what is clear is that there was a clear sense in the management of the project that the liability of the president would decrease progressively. Secondly to that is that if you then contrasted failed information to the public protector's report, the public protector says that in fact, before invoking the National Key Points Act, it was in the debate about the swimming pool, therefore the president was asked to be liable for the payment of the pool, to which, as consistent with the National Key Points Act. When you read furthermore, you read even in the SIU report, it's clear that it says here that the president knew from about the project that were taking place, and from time to time even expressed frustration at the lack of progress and the resultant disruptions. So, Chairman, I wanted to put it to bed the suggestion that the president was somewhat ignorant of a massive project taking place in his house, in his private residence in this instance. It's also very clear that there was a very deliberate intention to deviate from supply chain management. I think Honorable Kubai is right. There were deviations taking place. What remains to be questioned is the issue of inspiration. People don't necessarily wake up in the morning and say, it is sensible for us to take money away from project A to finance the project in Ngami. Now I read in the very same SIU report, it says, The officials who reported on any reference of views expressed by him were senior government officials who ought to have been familiar with procurement and supply chain process. If these officials labored under the impression that the president was the origin of the undue pressure being brought to bear upon them in discharge of their responsibility, they were in a position to report such improper conduct to constitutional institutions which have been established to deal with such conduct. This is a response from the president. I find it fascinating that you are creating a system here that says, whilst the principal agent who's tasked with securing the resources of the country is now saying, if someone junior has a problem, they must then report their bosses, which to me does not hold probability. Couldn't be that someone who is junior in an organization suddenly wake up and say, well, actually, we must go report, considering the chain of command that comes from the principal agent as stated in the SIU report, plus the public protector's report, saying that this is how this matter must be handled and taken forward. And it's like my colleague James has pointed out, that you then had ministers literally going to investigate the quality of life, etc., etc. Once the culture sets into an organization, it is driven by his authoritative support stemming from the top. It can't originate from the bottom. So even the statement that the defense of the president emerges from cannot exist. I think also is that it then becomes clear that we had a number of institutions that have failed in terms of executing their duties, or at least were instructed to fail in executing their duties. So what I would like us to at least first and foremost deal with critically, I think my colleague, Honorable Malema, says the president said his day in court. I think it would be of interest to this committee to get testimony from the president, before the president. Whatever the court processes are, that I can't be able to be in control of. But I find it obscene, if not confusing, that one would arrive home to a project where costs were inflated, and one would argue the case that simply did not know. Therefore, I think it would be fair if this committee wants to do its job in holding the executive and the principal executive here to account at the start. I will argue the case that the president must at least be summoned. And note, I'm using the word summoned before we talk about subpoena a person, that the president must appear before the subcommittee. Because it would be important that if you read all the reports that are here, the responses that the president has put forward, whether it be to the SIU, are insufficient, whether it be to the public protector, is insufficient, whether in complying with the public protector request that the president respond to parliament, that response is completely insufficient. So what is happening here is that we are dealing with a principal who appointed an architect, executed a mandate, commanded a chain of command. I mean, issued instructions from the top that were followed blindly, and you might argue matters around where it was blindly followed or not. I want to understand it from the origin of the process. Because the president argues in his submission to the House of Parliament that there was already a project in place and that project needed to continue. So what I'm fascinated in, Lady Chairperson, is that in fact it might be helpful for this committee, for the president to be able to come, so that we can understand what the president knew and did not know. Otherwise, we leave this committee on the basis of the reports that are here with insufficient responses. There is not a single report that the president has replied to adequately. And in fact, the author of the response of the report makes that respective point. So it would be helpful that the president come and appear before this committee so that this committee can sit back and be able to establish for himself what his knowledge of the project was, what his directions were, and then ultimately what is his liability. Because furthermore, if you then take the line that is taken in the public protector's report and also the president's response to this house and the president's response to Advocate Tulima Lonsela, the president argues to say that the Minister of Police must be the appropriate person to make a determination as to how much the president is liable for. Now, with all due respect, I think we can understand that Minister Ntleko has an interest in this matter. He's certainly a member of the executive, he's certainly a member of President Zuma's province, even just in an origin point. Now, it would be key that whatever his determination is, also be subject to the scrutiny of this House, that we can establish the extent to which the President is liable. For you to be able to do that fairly, it would require that the President is here, so that the President can account on this issue, so that we can understand it, so that it doesn't take place in the similar process as the building of the process of the project started. Because in the building of the project, people are quoting the President and saying the President is X, Y, Z. What I don't want to do here is sit with secondary testimony. I think it would be fair, Chairperson, I'd like to call at this House, request that the President be able to come and serve before this committee so that we're not dealing with secondary evidence, that we understand what his liability and knowledge is. Thank you, sir. The Honourable Masego.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I don't see the reason why the President must be summoned, Honourable Maiman. I really don't see. Unless they have not read the documents properly. The information that is before us gives us all the information that we have. Also, the assumption by Honourable Malema that the President imposed Makaya, I'm not sure about that. My understanding is that the President in 2008, and that is what is uncovered by the SIU, had started upgrades, planning for the upgrades to his home state in Makaya, and appointed Makaya to be the architect. That was a private matter. So when he became President, he then said in a meeting, and he was aware that there's going to be upgrades to his home state, that as a family man, I had started already with the process of upgrades to my home state. This was my architect. He was the project manager. So can tell you what is it that you are up to, what is it that you're planning, so that you don't have parallel processes. He didn't say that you must appoint Makaya to be the project manager. He didn't say you must appoint Makaya to be the architect for the state upgrade. He said, I started plans, and this is the end that was doing the architecture for my home state. Also, the digital officials had estimated an upgrade of 27.89 million. But then DPW, on page 4 of the SIU paragraph, page 4, He said that if EPW did not follow ordinary processes and procedures in procuring services and contractors, EPW did not put in place ordinary means of protecting the public interest and the public place. Also, Jefferson, on the upgrade, because when you look at page 244 of the NIU report, it says in their conclusion, Chair, that there are two final issues that you are constrained to mention in this report. First is that during the inspection in loco, the investigating team noted a number of matters of concern relating to the upgrade that have been affected. For security reasons, we do not mention them in this report. However, we will set this out in a big memorandum that we prepare for the presidency. And secondly, having regard to what was produced under Makanya's stewardship of the project and measuring it against what the security assessment report set out as planning, in our respective view, a further evaluation of the security situation by the LAPS should be undertaken as soon as possible. So the issue that Honorable Brian raised, that there are several people who inflated the prices, who went beyond their scope, who did not follow the PSMA, because as an accounting officer, you have to follow the PSMA. As an accounting officer, you have to refuse. No point putting down your throat. You have to refuse if you know your responsibility and demand that request to be in writing so that you protect yourself. So there was that loophole and flouting of responsibility by officials of the Department of Public Works. So, and lastly, Chair, in the issue, I don't know where Honorable Malimba comes back to the 90%, that page 42 of the public processor's report is that a reasonable percentage of the cost of the measure as determined with the assistance of National Treasury, also considering the DPW apportionment document, should be determined. It doesn't be 90%. Okay. So, Chairperson, I think we should bring something to conclusion, but I thought that I should just highlight these issues so that you don't assume that the President knew, yes, upgrades were being conducted in his home state, but as to how much it costed, and as the NIU said, that they're not even sure if those upgrades were done properly or they are up to that standard. So, head must drop to those people who are responsible, those accounting officers. Thank you.
The Honourable Swart. I'll add you to the list, Honourable Moses, Honourable Gandhi.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to make a few brief comments, and that is firstly on the aspect as to whether the President was aware. We've debated the issue at length, but there is, as Ms. Malema pointed out, when the newspaper reports in 2009 came out, obviously the President would then have been aware and read the newspapers. But there is a finding of the Public Protector's report in this regard. And if you look on page 439, here the Public Protector says it is not unreasonable to expect that when the news broke in December 2009 of the alleged exorbitant amounts, 65 million, security at the Bounty State, the defense of sections 96 and 237 of the Constitution and the Executive Ethics Code required of President Zuma to take reasonable steps to order an immediate inquiry into the situation and correct any irregularities in existence. So even if he didn't know, once it was in the newspapers, he then is required. And the finding is there. His failure to act in protection of state resources constitutes a violation of the Executive Ethics Code and amounts to conduct that is inconsistent. That is a finding. We don't have to debate it. It's a finding by the Public Protector that stands. Now, we also differ to some degree from the majority party on the impact of the Public Protector and the reports. And I was quite amazed, if I understood the member correctly, that said that if the remedial aspects or something are not binding and that we can change it, but I might have understood the member incorrectly. But it is very clear, and as I've heard all the members of the opposition, that it is only a court of law that can review a finding of the Public Protector. Now that then takes me to the second point, and that is the Minister of Police being requested by the President
to ascertain the amount of money that should be repaid. But that in itself is giving power to the Minister of Peace, which he does not have, and amounts to a review of what the public protector has already found. Again, usurping the power of the court to review. That in itself is an illegal action. So we shouldn't even be debating it. So we need at some stage to have a full debate as to what we understand. First is the hierarchy of the public protector's report. Secondly, the powers of the public protector. And thirdly, the response of the president when he says the public protector is an ombud. Nothing more, nothing less, and is a judge. Now that is directly in contradiction to what the Supreme Court of Appeal has already said in the Mail and Guardian case versus the public protector, where the Supreme Court of Appeal has said this public protector is far wider than an ombud. And surely President Zuma himself should be aware of that decision of the NCA, and his advisors are advising him incorrectly. This is not a purely ombud. This public protector has constitution-enshrined powers. Her findings stand until a court of review sets them aside. We as Parliament cannot even engage and change her findings that stand. So I feel very strongly about that issue, and I think it's already set up not only by commentators but by the Supreme Court of Appeal already, and I urge members to read that decision so they'll be fully on the same page when it comes to the powers of the public protector. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Swart. The Honourable Lakuri.
Thank you, Chairperson. Okay, Chairperson, I just want to bring to the attention of all of us here that we agree that something went wrong on that project, of which corruption and looting did happen. And as taxpayers, we want those responsible to be brought to book. That is our understanding as members of Parliament. And also, before we can talk about the issue of paying how much and this and that, the amount spent on this project, we know for sure that it's 200 something million. And we know that the president in the House, which is on Hazard, said that him and his family built their own houses. In terms of the security upgrades, that is another issue. And that is where corruption took place. That is where looting took place. And this is becoming a tendency in South Africa. We saw this during the World Cup, when stadiums were being built, that there was looting and corruption by the private sector. So, here, we are saying, those who were supposed to monitor and do oversight on the project did nothing to do that. The officials didn't follow the PFMA. And also the ministerial handbook of 2003 was not followed. We are saying those must be brought to book. So before we can say the president must pay how much, what has been done as in time? If it's worth that much, is there a value for money on what on the ground regarding the security upgrade? Or people just collected money to enrich themselves? Those are the questions that we need to ask ourselves. Then again, the public protector inherent said that still there are security features that are to be installed, of which must be done. So given the fact that this much money has been spent on the project, how much more is going to be spent? Yes, those security features that are still to be installed are necessary to be installed in that compound. Then, when it comes to the issue of whether the president must pay or not, it's another story. Did the president, if the president asked for some things to be done by the state in his house, then that things to be done. That a lot of security related. But when it comes to the things that are mentioned on this public protection report and the other ones, like the issue of the call, cattle call that is worth 1.2 million, then let's ask ourselves, did they use silver and gold to build that call? How did they arrive at that amount? If they, what is on the ground, is it really worth the 1.2 million? Because here, we know there were many contractors, there were many contractors, then they were looting and looting and looting. So how can we say then that because the president, these upgrades were done at home, he knew about this, then do we have a proof of, because my understanding is that according to the process that was outlined by Honorable Zieman, there was supposed to be communication in writing and approval of the fund that was used. Even the initial funding, initial funds of 27 million that was supposed to have been used there. I don't understand how the PW came around that. You could see that flouting of processes led to this security upgrade being looted to. Okay, just bear with me, Chairperson, because I was making a note of that. Then for the President to refer to the Minister of Police to assist in the determination of the amount to be paid, if there is any, is also according to the remedial action of the Public Protector. You cannot say that I must pay this amount and you expect me to determine that on my own. The Public Protector's report said that the Treasury, National Treasury and the staff, which is the light department responsible for the safety of the President and the Executive, must assist in that regard. But before we jump to that, to say that someone must pay this much and this much, let's check where things went wrong. Because people didn't do their job. They didn't do their job. I cannot be told by someone if I'm in a position of authority to say, do this. I refuse. Because I live my life. And I cannot allow anyone to dent my image. Because of something that I believe and the law says is wrong. So, as a constitutional democrat, we believe that as this country, we uphold the rule of law. Everything must be done according to the book. There is no way that we can flout processes then, knowing very well that the media will run the story, and then the principal, because he is the owner, that must take responsibility. No, we can't do that. If need be, because as of now, there are processes that are annoying. People are being charged criminally and civil claims are being taken up upon some people. Then that is what we need. And if there is someone who is still hiding somewhere, we must have an effort so that those people, all of them, be brought to book. We all haters, of which is not to say, we want to know where the money goes. Thank you, Chair.
The Honourable Self will be followed by the Honourable Mateka.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I don't think any of us dispute that there was an environment created that encouraged large-scale fraud, corruption and looting in this project. I think there were many people who did many wrong things, and I think all the reports indicate that there was major system failure on just about every count. But I want to really speak in support of the Honourable Maimani's request that the President comes here, because there are a number of unanswered questions. And in specific, if I refer you to the report of the Public Protector at paragraph 692, on page 282 and 694 on page 283. On both occasions, the public protector put very explicit questions to the president, and I note the president's reply is still awaited. 694 reads, I never received a further response from the president to the questions posed to him. In other words, as it stands at the moment, the public protector's report is lacking in the sense that critical information the president had at his disposal was not part of this report. The second thing emerges from the report of the FIU at page 183, when, as I think Honourable Mulder referred to earlier, 15 very explicit questions were put to the president, and the president, from paragraph 128 onwards of the SIU report, simply answered in generalities and did not answer the 15 very explicit questions that were asked. Now, the question needs to be asked, why did he do so? He did so because he didn't want to give the truth, didn't want to give the whole picture, because there was something to hide, and there was something to hide because it is not the rosy picture decided by the Honourable Deputy Chief Whip. Because when it comes to knowledge, I want to quote you from the statement that he did in fact, the President did make to the public protector. And that appears on page 278 and onwards of the public protector's report. He says here, in the course of the engagement with the security cluster, I initially met with then Minister Doidge, senior SAPS officials and other government officials at my own step in a consultative process regarding improved security due to my occupying the office of President of the Republic. He goes on. He says, I thereafter facilitated a meeting between the same group of people and Makanya Architects, the consultant who was already engaged with the building work at my home, so that there would be as little disruption as possible with the work already commissioned. And what then happens is that Mr. Makanya becomes the principal agent. And what happens thereafter is that Money Mine Construction Company, that does the initial work on the president's house, becomes the principal contractor for the security upgrades. And you can tell me, as a taxpaying South African, that there was collusion there. Of course there was a collusion there. The collusion was between the president and Mr. Makanya. That's where the collusion took place. And then Mr. Makanya handed the bills and made the project much more expensive than it should have been. And that is really where we need to drill down. And then he goes on to say, from time to time I receive briefings, both formally and informally, from the various ministers engaged with the security enhancements. Although I was not intimately involved with the final details, well, that's very convenient, I must say, have general knowledge but not particular knowledge, I'd like to suggest that he remain integrally involved, even down to the extent of disapproving of the window, the bullet resistant glass, because it reminded him of his experience of incarceration. So what is meant by not intimately involved in the final details entirely escapes me. And so, Chairperson, I really do believe that it is necessary for us to get to the bottom of this. And I think just on the subject of the question of costs and responsibility for costs, I think everybody seems to accept that the President is indeed responsible for some of those costs. The question is just what is the nature of the entitlement or the responsibility for that. And in that respect, the public protector, in fact, made a finding. And I'll, if I can find it quickly. The public protector makes the point that the president benefited unduly from the upgrades to his private residence, and has the responsibility to pay for them. Now the question is not whether he has the responsibility to pay for them, the question is simply how much he has to pay and for what he has to pay. And that is the question that we need to get down to. Thank you, Chairman.
Honourable Chairman.
A
number of chairpersons
unfortunate that Honorable Jeffs did not speak. It's a pity that Honorable Jeffs. Yes, man. My voice swallows some of the of course, you are free to speculate. You know, if he had spoken timely, we wouldn't have the unfounded recommendations that are being placed before us, because his 10-point plan or 10-point steps show us that before you can say the president to pay this or that, you should have considered the origination of the process, the roles played by other role players, including officials, accounting officers, and ministers. And that consideration of those steps would indicate whether or not the president was aware. But to put the question that the president must have been aware, the president was aware without following those steps, it means we are venturing in the area of speculation. We with due respect, we are speculating. And our mandate, this commission, is to consider the reports and come to conclusion based on the content of the reports. Now, the conclusions and recommendations already before us are not informed by the reports, and that is unfortunate. You know, the other misleading thing here was that honorable members start by saying there is an elephant in the room. Our duty is to look at all animals in the room, and after considering each animal, then come to a conclusion if there is an elephant in the room. So we can't start by finding an elephant before we look at the animal in the room. So that's a flawed approach. Now the second thing is, it would have been irresponsible of the president if work is going on in his complex and then government rising out of its responsibilities wants to come and secure his complex, for him not to introduce the people already busy, because as Honorable Kubai correctly said, there was a need to synchronize what was already going on with what was going to happen. So that was a natural responsibility that he had to discharge to harmonize and integrate to the two processes. So anyone who says that introducing Makanya was the imposition of Makanya is wrong. And if they want to make that right, they must go back to the report and come to that conclusion. That conclusion must flow from the report. But so far, there's no basis to suggest that the president imposed Makanya. And for instance, there's this question of Rindley asking for more money and so on. You can't attribute what happened to the president, because we are saying there were investigations. The investigations produced the reports. Now, what our conclusions must be informed by the outcome of those investigations. And now also, you see, people have the tendency to name drop. If people name drops and say, look, this will not satisfy our principles, this will not satisfy the powers that be, that could just be a matter of name dropping.
how can we use name dropping as evidence to come to the conclusions that some of us are trying to come to? And there was this suggestion that the Public Protector's report has suggested as to how the liability of the President should be determined in conjunction with the Treasury. I think that is really premature, because we have not yet arrived at a stage where we can say the President is liable for this and this, because we must distinguish between two things. We must distinguish between two things. And I can cite my own experience. When I became Premier of Gauteng, the SAPS did the assessment, security needs and things like that. And they took decisions as to what was going to happen to my premises. They didn't ask me anything. And then they did all those things. They didn't even show me how much they had spent and how they came to those amounts. So my responsibility was merely not to let children spend in their way or some dogs to spend in their way. Now, right now, in the house where I stay, where there is a minister staying, the same assessment was made both here in Cape Town and in Johannesburg, and they didn't ask her or me anything, and then they delivered the product. So if anybody could ask me or her why this was put in, why that was not put in, we will not be able to explain. Why, if this is the general approach of government, why should we make an exception when it comes to the president? It appears that some of us have predetermined or preconceived ideas, and we're working on that, not necessarily on the fence. Secondly, my view with respect is that here we have a real danger that we can talk about the liability of the president arising out of unlawful acts by officials and project managers. Now, when you want to determine how much the president must pay, you can't do that before you know how much of this is created by unlawful action. So that's why I say the 10-point plan is useful, because if we can do things step by step, along the way, we will detect culpability of the various role players. And at the end, you may find that what you want the president to pay results from those unlawful acts. But now, therefore, there must be two scenarios. The one scenario is if there are things that the president requested, he would have requested at the planning stage, and those things would have come into the strategic plan and the budgeting and so on. But we can't just go to the end and say, he owes this and that. And also, it's premature to deal with that question before we look at the roles played by the other left people. So a point basically has not been laid for that. But also, with great respect, we must be careful of looking, considering reports, but leaving the report and speculate about what might happen. Because much of the time, from some of our honorable members, was on speculation, opinions of what could have happened, and using that speculation and opinions, come to the conclusion that the president must pay. I think is out of order. The other point is that there must have been influence. You see, if you want to suggest that the president influenced anyone, then you must follow the 10 steps. Check at every step, how did the president interact with the process? That was the initial introduction of a person. And also, the president did not dictate to the Department of Public Works who to appoint. He only introduced the person who was already on the ground for synchronization. Now, therefore, I'm saying that to come to the determination as to who is liable for what. You have to, especially the president, you have to take the 10 steps and say, how did he interact with each step, and determine as a matter of fact, not speculation, that he has influenced the position. So far, none of my friends on the other side have really established that there was influence, so we must reject with contempt any suggestion that the president influenced or anyone of his family influenced this. Now, what is also strikingly absent is that honorable members should know that in government there are accounting officers. No one even suggests that there was called any accounting officer. And they are also ministers responsible for executive oversight. No one is suggesting that we must indict any of them. And we should also bear in mind that if the president says, I received briefings, those briefings must have come from those accounting officers and the responsible ministers. Why do we, unless we have an ulterior motive, why do we jump all these accounting officers and the responsible ministers and say, we have found an elephant in the room and we want to deal with this elephant in the room? The question of ombudsmen versus public protest. You know, I guess all of us followed the constitution making process and some of us were part of that. The reason that South Africa used the term public protector, not ombudsman, was because South Africans knew of the triple oppression of women, and consistent with our policy on gender equality, we could not use the word ombudsman. It's a conscious choice. We said public protector. But that did not mean that the public protector we envisaged was different in terms of functions to the ombudsman. And the reason why the Supreme Court of Appeals said that the public protector had more power, the court meant more power in terms of the fact that the public protector by law can be proactive, initiate investigations without anybody referring letters to her. That is the only difference between the public protector and the ombudsman. But I think that power as defined by the Supreme Court of Appeal do not make the public protector, the investigator, the prosecutor, the judge, and the sheriff to enforce it. There's no power like that. And now to say, for instance, that anybody who disagrees with the public protector must go to court, I think it's telling half story. Because on Chapter 9 institution, reports to account to Parliament, and when any of those institutions refer their report here, or a report comes here at the request of the Speaker, and that report addresses a matter of national interest, this Parliament cannot just endorse that report. And in a present circumstances, it's even different because we are not faced with one report. We are faced with more than one report addressing the same issues, and they are conflicting recommendations. So should this Parliament be asked to endorse 10 conflicting positions, which one are we going to implement? Our responsibility is to consider all the reports and the recommendations and come to our own determination as Parliament. Chairperson, there is this issue that the president must come and account, must be subpoenaed. I don't know where that arises from. I don't know where that arises from, because if it has to arise, it must arise after we have considered the 10 steps and checked his interaction with the process. So it's really premature to even suggest that the president must come here. Honorable Swart, you know, I think also it would not be fair to say that the president has failed in anything, because on his own, the president appointed the inter-ministerial committee when he felt that things are not going well. And on his own, he appointed the SRU. He would not have appointed the SRU and the inter-ministerial committee unless he is a president who is committed to make sure that there is clean governance. So it's really premature even to suggest that he failed anything. It's not true that he failed. And finally, I think let's agree that there is a chain of accountability. The president appoints ministers to exercise executive oversight over those projects, and those projects are initiated by his ministers, and his ministers have accounting officers. And now, why do you jump all those things and go to him? Because even if you go to him, you will still go back to those people, because he is personally not responsible to exercise oversight over details and over projects. So I think it's taking it too far. So let's conclude this matter by saying that as matters stand now, we can talk about the president's liability in this sum or that sum, if any, because a lot of unlawful activities took place which led to the inflation of prices. So I guess even what we may think is owed may be a result of inflated prices. So let's follow the 10-point plan systematically. Then the 10-point plan will assist us. But what we've been doing here, we were jumping from one stone to another, and it is not helpful. Thank you very much.
Honorable Murray, to be followed by the Honorable Garden, Honorable Malema. Chairperson, we cannot follow the 10-point plan, because the President chose to duck and dive the questions. We can't follow it. Point 1 of the 10-point plan says that the President should have requested these things to his house. We don't know if he requested it. He refused to answer those questions. He duck and dive. So, Mr. Motseha says, we are speculating. Why are we speculating? Because we don't know. Why does he know? Because the President chose not to answer the questions. Did the President fail? Absolutely. Why did he fail? He's not holding the Constitution. All organs of state. And surely the President is number one to assist the public protector in fulfilling their duties. It's shameful. Don't look at this report, what the public protector reports, how she pleads with the President, please answer these questions. Who debates the public protector's process the longest of all? The President. 9 months, he did not answer the questions. And then finally, after being reprimanded time and time and again, he still chose to ignore and answer the questions. So why do we speculate? Because the President decided not to inform and cooperate with the structures of government. Is this committee going to do the same? Are we going to play along? Our colleague there just now said, there is no need for the President to appear before this committee. So we don't want the answers. We don't want them. Or do we need the answers? Without the answers, we have to speculate. How do we speculate? Just cutting things from the air? No, we use our minds. Huge failure from the departments and the officials. Why? Why the failure? Did those officials get up one day and say, this is our dance. Now we're going to ignore all regulations. Where? For the most important project, the one of the President's House, and to flaunt all directions, all directives, all provisions of the Act, we're just going to enjoy ourselves. Is that what happened? Or should we use our minds and say, what happened here?
Dr. Motega says we must look at all the animals in the room. You are trying to, but I can't see them because it's a huge elephant in the middle of the room. I can't see the animals. There are many animals, and we'll get to those animals. The president is not the only one to appear before this committee. We should start with Mr. John Rindle from the Department of Public Works. He should come and explain and tell us what made him decide to ensure, under all circumstances, that Mr. Makanya should be in charge of the project. But he decided it all by himself. I want to hear it from himself. The former Minister of Public Works, Mr. Jeff Deutsch, should come to this committee and explain to us that he decided all by himself to bring the two projects together. Dr. Motsega says, all that the President did was to ensure synchronization. How did it end up from in synchronization to total control by Mr. Makanya? Let's say the President was not involved. Is there a chance that the President became aware of that? As the process continued, millions of rand being spent, budget increasing, meaning another 100 million. Is there a chance? Mr. Makanya says, I was reacting to the President throughout. Is there a chance that the President perhaps asked the question, my personal architect, you're now in charge of security measures? Or is that speculation? We don't know, because the President refuses to answer the question. Dr. Motsega is first to name drop him. It's not the first time. Didn't we have a Gupta gate audit to the thing where also name dropping was even the names were dropped by coincidence. Number one was mentioned. Completely innocent. It's not the first time that happened. That's why exactly we are saying that President should come here. Maybe we should ask the drop name to come and tell us. Would it be unreasonable? Would we be fulfilling our duties in terms of the Constitution? I believe so. It's asked in terms of what the President should repay or not repay, but did he request these things? I don't know. He was asked questions, he didn't answer them. So, we must find out. But what I do know is, nowhere in any of these reports did the President go on record to say, I don't want this. Please, no helipad, please, take it away. I don't want this bunker with all the fields and all the tunnels and the escape routes. Nowhere on record did the President say that. As a matter of fact, Public Protector made the finding. Page 437, paragraph 10914. It is my considered view that as the President tacitly accepted implementation of all measures at his residence and has unduly benefited from the enormous capital investments on the non-security installations at his private residence, a reasonable part of the expenditure towards the installations that were not identified as security measures in the list compiled by security experts pursuant of the security evaluation should be borne by him and his family. It's not an opinion, it's not speculation, it's a finding by the Public Protector. Why? He tacitly accepted everything that happened. Should the President have known? Yes, he should have known. Why? The bomb exploded in November 2009. There's in the press. 65 million, not 27 million. Why suddenly 65? You know why? Because the original assessments did not take into consideration the needs of the police and defense force, etc., it can be argued. But then Alu says, because of all that happened, the sad result, page 9, the sad result is that the project that could have been undertaken at a cost of some 60 million ended up costing about 216 million. Should the President have known? I think he should have. Why? It was in the press. He issued a statement saying, no. No state funds, I registered a bond. Where is the bond, Mr. President? The Public Protector specifically asked the President to provide her with the proof of that bond. Why does the President refuse to do that? He even went further to say that you make it available to some lawful institution, etc. The Public Protector said, I think I am. I will keep this with circumspection, it's private. The President ignores it until today. Are we speculating? Why are we speculating? For other situations, I would just like to refer to the questions to the President. The colleague, Bessert, now said, how should you know what the President should pay, should he pay anything, etc.? The President has the opportunity on more than one occasion to come clean. Question number 14 asked to the President by the Public Protector, page 273. And that's another person, obviously, who should be, would like to hear. I think Mr. Jeff Deutsch. I want to hear from the former Deputy Minister. She tried to intervene. She drew up a schedule to indicate what are state expenditure, what would be private expenditure. What happened? she was removed from the project overnight. And after that, the president's responsibility in terms of indicators of private spending became smaller and smaller and smaller, as other my money indicated. Just keep on going and disappear altogether. We need an architect. I would love to hear what Mr. Kanyana says. He's now been asked to repay $155 million. You know, there was a nice SMS, you must take note of social media when this thing was broke, when the person said in an SMS, I know what happened there. I was there, me and my wife were extending some, making some extensions to my house. I was very busy. My wife didn't know what was going on. And you know what? The architect decided to build us this huge house we've got now, and we are bankrupt in the process. That's how it works. The report indicates that the architect was in interaction with the president throughout the process. Maybe the president didn't ask all these things. Mr. President, come and tell us. That's only fair. If you don't tell us, what deduction should we make? The deputy minister should come along. She indicated, the former deputy minister, question 14 of the public protector, indicated during the investigation, she indicated that she discussed the security measures with the president. She discussed it, the president. Okay. She also raised the possible apportionment of costs of the security measures between herself and between the president and the state with you. And what did the president then do? He listened, and he was responsible and reasonable, said. And you, Mr. President, requested the document to be prepared by the project team in this regard. What document? To indicate what a personal expense that the president would be responsible for. The president asked for such a document. That document disappeared at some stage, and it was found again by at another place, a copy of that. The document was prepared and delivered to the Ministry of Public Works. Can you please look at this document and indicate where it was presented to you? And if so, what your response was? The president ignored that question until today. Question 15. If the document was not presented to you, was the apportionment of cost ever discussed with you? If so, when and by whom? It was never answered until today. A vital question, number 16, and that's why it's quite important as before. Without the elephant in the room, surely the president, as the head of state, should set the example. Don't tell me that you are coming to my house. You spend 250 million rand, and I don't know about that. I go there sometimes, I interact with people. Things are happening around here. Here's a huge fire pool. There's a helipad. There's bunkers. There are everything. I don't know about that, but that's not the point. I don't ask. I don't think it's important for me, as the head of state, I should set the example. Speech after speech in Parliament, we are fighting corruption. I don't set the example. Question number 16. Mr. President, did you ever inquire into it? And if so, what was the response you received? That is now about the money being spent and what you are responsible for. It was never answered. Until today, it's not answered. Why not? Are we going to report back to Parliament as a committee to say, you know, the president never answered. But guess what? We really don't care. We are not interested in those answers. We will be making a huge mistake and not fulfilling our obligations if we do not go into that and get those answers. So I agree with it, Mr. Dr. Motsega. The president is not the only one that should come here. Those other people should also come here and explain why would they suddenly decide not to keep all the regulations, to all the provisions, it was just free for all. Is it a reasonable deduction to make to say, and look throughout, it's reported in a number of places, not once, that the president was concerned about escalating costs. You will find that not on any page. And what you will find is pressure being applied by the president to his ministers and from them to the officials. Why is it taking so long? Why haven't you finished? And then it was mentioned by Mr. Maimani just now in terms of the contractors, Maimani and the other one. It's also stated quite clearly in these documents. The president insisted that new contractors should not be used, that the same ones used in phase one should be maintained for phase two. Why? Because the job was done so properly? I don't know. I would like to ask the president. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Gardner. Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, I think we need to clarify in context the provisions of Section 64 of the PFMA. The only official ever to be protected from an evasive directive with its financial implications that are more likely to result in fruitless wasteful expenditure is only the accounting officer. not any other official entity. It cannot be read with any other provision. The Act is very clear. The provision says only an accounting officer can demand a directive in writing. Any other official who refuses to implement a directive is just insubordinate and be dismissed. And out of fear, they will do whatever they are told. And the law does not say they must demand such a directive in writing. So we shouldn't read it as if even a receptionist is cleaned up, a state accountant is protected by the PFMA. Only the accounting officer who receives an instruction from a minister or an executive authority. I can see that our colleagues on the other side of the room are judiciously and rigorously carrying out the instruction of defending President Zuma at all costs. They just don't want him to appear in public to account for whatever happened in his house, which he claims not to know. I thought maybe this should be the opportunity of the colleagues, the other side, to show it to the South Africans that they do not receive instructions from the big house, but they process matters objectively as such, not really within a 24-hour sort of instruction from Tuli House. We see them mounting a second class defense on an issue that President Zuma must appear before this committee. I'm just imagining that there would also be a resistance of an inspection in local of the premises there. And it does appear that it will also be refused. What this committee should discuss is the list of people who must be called to appear before this committee, the date at which they must appear before this committee, the questions they should prepare themselves to answer. That's all that this committee actually today should discuss. In fact, we are being hoodwinked here to conduct this committee's business unconstitutionally. I mean, we are called upon to question the findings of the public protector in terms of section 182(c) to take remedial action. We are told that we should not support the public protector in her findings that the president should do the following thing. The question that must be answered is, did the president request the Minister of Finance and Treasury to determine how much he should pay, not as whether he should pay or not? His claim of the directive was just to ask the Minister of Police to determine whether he should pay or not, not as to how much he should pay. I think that is very manipulative of the President. Fast forward a little bit here. On the issue of Shabir Sheikh, he fell alone on the sword, poor young man. The same thing with Bruce Kulani on the Gupta case. Now again here on the Inkatha case, the old man must escape. He was not responsible for the Shabir Sheikh issue. He was not responsible on the Gupta case issue. He's also not responsible. In fact, this official, everywhere his name is being dropped. What is wrong with him that every time his name must be dropped? He must answer the question before us. Why his name is being dropped? What is wrong with him? Yeah. And then, this committee here, our colleagues, the National Keypoint Act is very clear on what must be done. How it should be determined, how much due by the president. We do not have to question why we should deal with the issue of the public protector's report, because the executive members of this act and the public protector's act and the constitution say so. Now, the NIU does not even appear in the constitution of the republic. It's established by a subsidiary act. But we are now called upon to even put aside the public protector's report instead of dealing with the issues it is raising. The president has a fiduciary responsibility. There is case law which actually confirms that ignorance cannot be an excuse. There is actual enrichment. You cannot say, I do not know, when you ordinarily get unduly enriched. And you say, ah, no, I did not know. The 10-point approach, I think, should be reduced to a 5-point approach. Firstly, the first point out of the 10 points should be, let us draw an itinerary of days and people who must be called to appear before the committee. Let us draw the questions and then identify all the road players and also support all other parallel processes in this matter, whilst we are involved in the core business of the committee. But for our colleagues from the ANC really to stand up there before the machine to say, no, President Zuma should not appear here, nobody should appear here, actually let us live with the report of the SIU that all those officials should fall on their sword and suffer the consequences. It is business as usual. Go back to the hub and recall that the committee agrees that the president has got no question to answer. He did not know anything. We don't know what he is actually being made out of us in this committee. And look forward to our colleagues to write about partisan politics and think better of the taxpayers' money that has been abused in Ghana. Thank you, Chairperson.
Malema?
Thanks, Chairperson. I think some of the utterances on the powers of the public protector, they are so painful that they even remind some of us of having participated in the process of Detroit Scorpions for no apparent reason. And we're made to believe that Scorpions are a problem. And we are doing exactly that. We have lived to regret those experiences. We destroyed the most credible institution that fought corruption because we're told that institution is a problem in South Africa. You're doing exactly that. I think we should allow our consciousness to speak to others. Do not commit a similar mistake of destroying every institution in this country that fights corruption. Why do we tear apart like that the Office of Public Protector? I'm not going to do that. I can equally just withdraw if we are going to sit in a meeting that reviews the findings of Public Protector. I will never do that. I will never do that. I will never sit here and be told that there is a resolution of a committee where I participate who says, no, we are changing the following resolutions of the Public Protector. We must never do that, honorable members. The Public Protector, remedial actions are final and we must implement it. We can't question them. They are final because those powers are prescribed in the Constitution. Why should we sit here and allow a situation where the Constitution is destroyed like this? Every time there is an institution which has got a problem with President Zuma, it's so painful because I did that through fighting the Scorpions, and you are doing exactly that. Every time President Zuma gets into trouble with an institution, that institution must be destroyed in defense of an individual, honorable Mseha, through the chairperson. Let's make a thorough self-introspection, and if indeed we want to be the people who destroy institutions that are aiming at defending this democracy, because public protection is what we're left with. Otherwise, the rest have been corrupted. The NPA, the orgs, there is no credibility. They get interfered with. Politicians can tell them who to prosecute and not to prosecute. The public protector still enjoys that type of objectivity and independence. We want to destroy it because of one individual. We did that with the Scorpions. And I'm reminding you But every time there's an institution of the state which questions the role of President Zuma, that institution must be destroyed in defense of one individual. Why should we be asked, why are you not saying this accounting officer or that accounting officer, why do you target one individual? If you want to say this or that accounting officer, say it. I want President Zuma. If you want acting director general, say let's also invite acting director general. It's not my business to be doing a list of those who must be invited here. If you think I've left others out, include them. But that is not what we're saying. We're actually adding to your list. The list of the so-called 10-point plan. If that 10-point plan speaks to people who must be prosecuted and taken to DC in terms of the SIU report and public prosecutor's report, we're saying in addition to that, let President Zuma be prosecuted. Let President Zuma come and accept him. You? After 1994, I've never thought I would sit in a meeting of people who tell us they subscribe to democracy, but refuse an executive or a member of the executive to come and account to a committee. Why should it be a battle? A member of the executive is clearly defined by the constitution. They account here. There will be a fight about calling President Zuma if he has got nothing to hide. You don't want him to come here because you know he's going to embarrass you. You know that there are a lot of unanswered questions. Public protector didn't get questions. I mean answers. SIU didn't get answers. Who else can get answers from President Zuma when these credible institutions didn't get answers? It's the parliament and the courts. He refused to answer public protector. There are questions here. I want to hear one of you say, yeah, you have answered that question. None of you can say you have answered those questions. You have not answered them. Because you have not answered those questions, you can't say, hey, why do you want to call people? You've got a report in front of you. An incomplete report because there's a report with questions without answers. That's why we need the president to come and answer those questions. Unanswered questions. Let the president come. Why should the president be scared to come to the committee of parliament that elected him? We are just doing our work. We don't have any other agenda here. We can do that with any other person or any other animal. If you think we are only targeting elephants, buffalo can also be called if buffalo has got some answer to provide to this committee. We are not only obsessed with elephants. So we have no difficulty calling any animal. So, and please, let's do away with this mentality that the president didn't know. The president says in the public protector's report 278 and 279, from time to time I received the briefings. He knew. So the argument the president didn't know is defeated. It's neither here nor there. So the president knew about what was happening there. And the Premier of Gauteng, or former Premier of Gauteng, when upgrades were made in his house, he didn't recommend or introduce any architect. That's why we'll believe you are told that you were not involved. Because you never introduced any architect. Unless the recent arrangement of Cape Town House and Pretoria, there is an architect that the wife of an honorable member has introduced. There is no issue about your house during that time and your house today. And then comparing the two is neither here nor there. That argument doesn't hold water. You never introduced anyone. When they came to make improvements in your house, Honorable Matole, you were not busy with any personal improvements to a point where you had to introduce an architect who later on took over the project of improving the house of the Premier in Gauteng, or the current Minister of Education. So let's avoid just bringing ourselves into matters that we are not even good examples of what we are dealing with here today. Apples and bananas should not be compared at all. You left Gauteng, you never had any allegations, serious allegations of corruption like the one we are dealing with here. So it is not correct that we should accept that explanation. I think also the public protector speaks clearly in the page 439 that the president knew when these matters were raised in public in 2009. And then it's not Julius who says the president failed. The public protector says his failure to act in protection of state resources constitutes a violation of paragraph 2 of the Executive Ethics Code and accordingly amounts to a conduct that is inconsistent with his office as a member of cabinet. The president failed to discharge his responsibility. It's not me. And the public protector also says, in a considered view, the president has technically approved, accepted implementation of the measures. It's accepted. So why do we come here and want to behave like we don't know? We don't know, and we so believe that the president was not involved, the president is wrongly accused, and the public protector does not have those powers. And then we even distort the letter the president wrote to the Minister of Police. He didn't write a letter to the Minister of Police in response now to ask him to determine how much must be paid. He said he must determine who must pay. We're still going back there. Who must pay? The public protector has dealt with that. So, the president must pay. And I never said public protector says president must pay 90%. I'm saying it is my considered view that a reasonable amount as prescribed by the public protector is 90%. I'm not saying she said that. But I'm aligned to the fact that the public protector says both Treasury and Ministry of Police must help him to arrive at a correct amount. Let's all agree in this committee that we give the Treasury and the police an opportunity to consult with the President within a reasonable period, which will determine ourselves, to determine how much must be paid. We are not going to agree on those 10 points plans that we don't know are plans for what. Because FAU report, interministerial tasking, and the public protector's report have outlined very clearly who must take responsibility in terms of those officials and the DGs. We have no problem. No one must say, we are saying people must be left and not be taken to DC and not be charged. Only President Zuma must be charged. That's not what we're saying. We say all those people mentioned there, they must take responsibility. On top of that, the president must also be held accountable. So we propose firmly that the ministers mentioned in the report, Deutsch and his deputy head, and the acting DG, and the architect, and the president must come. Must come before this committee and explain some of these things. And we're not calling them because we want to change the recommendations of the public protector. Inspection in law also is a very important exercise because it will help us to appreciate and answer the question whether there was value for money or not. The report right here, we see the pictures from a distance. Some will say, what's the value for money? Many ones we have seen will soften up and say, perhaps this was worth it. or we can arrive at an extreme, and all of us agree that indeed the president must be held accountable. There is a paragraph there where the public protector indicates very clearly. She's giving, pointers. The visitor center, the cattle crawl, and chicken run, swimming pool, amphitheater. That's where we start. We say, okay, these are not security agreements. Then we check how much was spent on that. Then we say, these are the amounts that must go to the president. If there are additional amounts in terms of the SIU report, we add them through Treasury and the police. Because Treasury and the police, in consultation with the president, they will determine a price, but that price must speak to the non-security upgrades. Anything that is not security, President Zuma must pay for. It happened under his watch. If his government failed him, the media did not fail him, he didn't act. So that's not these excuses that do not exist, that the president cannot take responsibility and all those things. And the president, again, has got more power. After paying, he still has got ministers to whip into line. Or you made me pay. Now it's your best to pay. He's got a recourse. Ministers who failed him, he must deal with them. If he will still be president after paying, I doubt. But the reality is, if he remains the president even after accepting that he took money illegally, he will have an opportunity to go back to the ministers who misled him and deal with them according to the recommendations of the public protector. So I plead that we do not repeat the mistakes we've done with the Scorpions, destroying institutions of the state in defense of an individual.
Next speaker is the Honorable Kubai. Thereafter, we will have the Honorable Sheikh Imam, followed by the Honorable Maimane. Honorable members, there is dinner that is arranged for just after 5:30. We'll break for dinner. We'll come back. There's a number of other names that already have been recorded. And then we will continue with the deliberations to move to one summit and update the process forward. In that order, please.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think, let me start with what Honorable Gandhi has raised. PSM, don't really see the case. Hence, I started to say I was an administrator. Very clear in what you can do and come to as an official.
Honorable Gandhi, let's give you an opportunity.
And I worry about what you used to do. If that's the case. Because it's very clear, you can't go and deviate and not for high that I was presented. That kind of thing doesn't arise. Because if you do that, you feel requested to account. But it starts from the bottom thing that you must read. And the mandate and what gives authority to the session, Section 86 of the Chessmen, that is how it controls even how the funds should be utilized. But besides that, there's a constitution that is prescriptive of what needs to happen. So we shouldn't sit here and promote lawlessness, that officials are not protected. The constitution protects them. Because if I stand and if the constitution says I should not do this, how does the constitution say that's your protection? What more are you looking for as an official? So I think it's very dangerous for a member of parliament to give an impression that officials are not protected by the law and they can be pushed anyhow. It's not true. Treasury regulations as well are very clear. So you need to go and really look at that. That's why when you look at the report of the PT as well, he's able to identify where the officials have broken the law and what remedial actions need to be taken. So if there was no basis, even SIE does that. If there was no basis, then we have easily let them off the move. So this is a junior. There is no one who's junior in government if it's given authority to decide. No one. If once you are put, because the people that you are talking about here, they are talking about project managers. We're talking about DGs who are in that as officials before we come to the other part. These are senior government officials who sign performance assessments. So we want to be very careful. That's why I need to respond to these things, because otherwise there will be an impression that Parliament supports officials to hide behind that as being pressurized. So officials need to know that they are accountable and they will be taken to court. There will be criminal charges if they do wrong things. That's pure. We shouldn't promote lawlessness and people not abiding by the law. There's another issue that was raised, Chairperson, that Honorable Malema is called for. That Mr. Makanya's accounts must be investigated and all that. And Honorable Malema would know that anyone who's under investigation, all accounts, everything, matter of finances of that person are investigated. It's true. That's how they found that you own so much of them.
No, Honourable Members, don't stray from the subject under discussion.
So that's the issue. Everything around your finances are investigated. So Honourable Makanya as he goes to court. No, not Honourable Makanya. Mr. Makanya as he goes to court. But here, no, it's not. That's why I started with it. He can never be Honourable.
No, I think it's a slip of the tongue.
I know he can never be Honourable Chairperson. But as he goes to court, all these facts, because if you look at, and I would appeal to colleagues, the documents on the charges of Mr. Makanya are public documents. You can access them. Only look at what he's charged and what the details are. He's under investigation, all the details are there. So that is a matter that is being dealt with. Done. Now, Chairperson, we come to the issues of where we are. And maybe just to also say, is it? We are not in the business of targeting one individual. And Honourable Member said, no, colleagues must consciously better. It's not about that, it's about the whole process. I said it in the beginning. Start from the beginning, what has happened. Because we have a duty to make sure that what has happened does not happen again. But if you change the case at the end without looking at the whole process, it's a problem. So, the issue here is that, okay, before I come even to that, there's a member also, Chairperson, who said that the SIU report can as well go to the portfolio committee. I think it's wrong. And I raised this earlier on. You see, we are members of parliament. Any institution that is formulated under the law, because there's a, whether it's a subsidiary act or a primary act, the fact that that institution has legal powers and standing and account the account to the parliament. It's important to us because it helps the parliament and it helps the country to achieve a particular goal. So that's why I called for the undertone around the SIU. So for us to be cautious, because even the PP says such a matter must be referred to the SIU in the report. So we shouldn't be selective how we pick things that we want, that puts us in the PP report, and others will put us aside. The PP says, this is what must happen. So, the importance of this report of SIU must not be given that it's a substandard thing, and therefore with the undertone that we can afford to put aside, we can afford to say it's not important. Because this is the voice that can assist to gain and to be able to refer things to the chair for prosecution. The PP can't do that. This is the institution that can do that. So that's why I caution Chairperson the other tone that is coming from. Then we come to the issue. I think maybe we are misunderstood. I don't think that any such president did know of the project. We never said that. I think even Justice of Us can be. The issue here, and even there, the president says that. That's why he has to introduce people. I mean, how do you introduce people if you didn't know about the project? We can't come and say, yes, the president introduced and therefore say, no, the president didn't know. The president has noticed that I knew. The issue here is to say the scope of work and the amount of escalation. That's the contentious issue there. Not that he didn't know. I mean, he even says as he goes home, he sees that the work isn't taking on his life is said because the work is not concluding. So it's acknowledgement that he saw, and it's there in all the documents. and even in his response. The other thing that is going to look at, Chairperson, is, for example, one of the things that I would want as well, why I would want even the officials to go to emphasize, the PP didn't reflect this, where the officials just deliberately ignore companies who do not even have tax clearance certificates. So if you have to take the narrative of the opposition, so President told them ignore them even if you don't have tax certificates. That's narrative that they are trying to find. Now we can. Acknowledgement by the officials, somewhere that they are creating, and somebody refutes, right, I've done this, but there's a legal document that the person has signed. It's there in the report. Now take the narrative of the opposition. President knew that the official will sign a document and refuse. Then come to the issue of the president having his day in court. I don't think it's up to us to decide that if members feel strongly about the Constitution of the Republic allows them to do so, it's up to them. But what we are here for and what we have in front of us, that is it. For example, you look at the documents and you look, I mean, at some point the PC says, in her considered view, that item, when she reflects to item, she even says it, 10 times is cautionary. That's a moral obligation. There is no legal framework. So we've got to start there. Are we dealing with moral issues or are we dealing within the framework of the law? What are the issues that we are considering here? Because the issue is that we can't want to be everywhere and selective in what we want to do. So, Chairperson, I'm just appealing that these are some of the things that we've got to look at. And let me just to go into where even, for example, the reflection of the issues of what the action should be taken. Because I find it very sensitive that colleagues are picking up selective, you know, certain paragraphs are left, certain ones are picked up, and then there's diversion. And I guess that one of the Mandela is corrected to say that it's not that they don't want other officials, but the initial statement that he made earlier on was saying we can't be choosing cleaners and local officials, which I think is correct that he has corrected that, but anyone who is found to have broken the law must face the consequences of the law. That's it. And there are very, very specific areas in terms of people who have broken the law. It comes to the president. Does the chief say the president has broken the law? No. This would have to show me where in the report does the PP say that. In the report, as not, maybe you will show me.
Honourable Member, let's continue and make your point.
Read the whole paragraph to read each other. That's why I'm asking for not selective reading. We are willing to engage. That's why it was that we must engage substantive with the court. So that we are having the same understanding. We are not selective in how we deal with it. Now, that's why I was mentioning that even the PP acknowledges that it's on moral obligation. That the president must say, well, it's about the call and everything. It's on moral obligation. Page 437, can check it. That's another issue. Now, chapter 7. The issue of Peter's writing about corruption. I don't know if members have picked up, but at some point this project was stopped. Whether they need to write as well. The project came in the report, official says the project because of inquiry, the project came to a stop. Because of this. So we can't want to, you see, that's something we truly need to do. This is part of the work that we need to do. If we say that at some point there was acknowledgement that something was wrong happened, and by the way, Chairperson, we need to go back as well to say, when President was NEC, there was an assessment. When President was Deputy President, there was an assessment. And very interesting in the process, it colleagues have looked at it.
At some point, even where there was minimum security measures that were passed, they were not done with Peter Blue. All it says is that the white man put some fire extinguishers and left the assembly vulnerable. At the time where it comes now, in 2009 he becomes the president. The issue is that now they go and collect that same old report and bring it forth. That's what has to do. So we've got an issue again here of where we should be able to reflect that at some point the people who are supposed to be protected are not protected. That's another issue that members have not been looked into. It's the truth. That's why you had Deputy Minister Tracy's house broken several times. God knows if she was in the house, what would have happened. So those are some of the issues, Chairperson, that when I say we must look at systematically the whole chain, what we are talking about. But it can be that as Parliament, we ignore all these other important things because we would be failing in our duties as well. We can't be that we have delegated our duties. The other issue, Chair, that we look into, as I said, the president then and how the departments did not even do what was at that time minimum requirements that they should have done. And I think I must say, on my level, PP's office is going nowhere. And ANC, we support the PP's office and we maintain that it must remain. The issue is, if there's something that is picked up that is not going right, we can't be quiet. There are various legal opinions. There are various legal people who are speaking about this matter. And it can't be that we allow that, you know, everybody can speak about it, we shouldn't reflect on it, our position, and how we view. And I can basically say there are certain issues that I record with in how the person PP currently behaves. If I reflect like that, that doesn't mean that I have a problem with the public health protector office. We acknowledge the good work that they've done in compiling this report. They've done extensively. The people's office have done work. They've gone into extensive and they keep on taking issues of public interest and the confidence that the public has in the public project is important. It is important as well to caution as Parliament when a Chapter 9 institution steps the mark. It's important because we have to as well, because the public protector comes here. The fact that when they come here and say, but 1, 2, 3, this is how we see the law, the constitution, this is how we see your act, but you are acting out of that, does not mean that we are saying the office is not important. There are matters of concern that must be addressed. That does not mean that you don't agree that in the quarters. So that is the case here. And I can't speak with your experience of Scorpion, unfortunately. I think I was still leading very low in terms of structures to have that knowledge that we have. Can't speak of it. But I'm saying where I'm sitting as a leader and as a South African citizen and as a public office bearer who has sworn to the constitution would ensure that the public protector operates within the legal framework that is assigned and that she is expected to operate in. I'm also at some point differentiating between the office and the person. Because at times, it's the character of the person that tends to be a bit problematic. So that does not mean that there is no constitutional and there is no support for the office. We support it very strongly so. And we support it to do its work. So, Chairperson, the issue of cost, again, if you look at all the statements, all of them have different opinions in how much. You look at, and I will come to the response by the President, in terms of, I think it's the last paragraph of his response to Parliament, page 19, paragraph 63.3. And I'd like to read this one, Chairperson. The Minister of Police has the designated minister under the National Key Points Act to report to Cabinet on the determination of whether the President is liable
for any contribution in respect of the security upgrade, having regarded to the legislation, past practices, culture, findings contained in the respective reports. So members have read one part of the response and another. So the respective report in terms of the report of the president includes the PC's report. That's why he started by reflecting that these are the reports that exist. So, as the PP is stipulating that the project is derived from the National Human Act, that's what the PP reflects. No, 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 I'm not saying the SIU, I'm saying the PP, the Public Protector. Because this is in response to the Public Protector, not to the SIU, what the president did. As a response to the PP, in terms of the PP determination, he said, you have said that this is derived from National Seapoint Act. The custodian, in terms of law, of the National Seapoint Act, the Minister of Police. That's the premise. That you have the Minister of Police here, as you said that in your report, it's the thing. So therefore, the Minister must determine. So you can read in terms of all the reports. But secondly, as you say, is that when you look at it, I would want to understand why would a consideration of the, because in terms of the law, the person who leads in terms of assessment, what is security, what is not security. Treasury doesn't know what is security, what is not security. DPW does not know what is security and what is not security. The staff doesn't know. And the minister then, No. I'm saying staff will know what is security and what is not security. Because DPW can't say this is security, this is not security. And no members will engage. Don't be agitated and want to respond. You have your number. I asked you to speak. I made my notes. Make your notes. And respond as a right hand. I see you are getting agitated. It's good to see that the content is coming there. So the issue here is that the Minister of Police is the one. Is the one that I initially said, I said, DPW was even bound to start by wanting to do an assessment. Which legal framework gives the bad money? None. Their responsibility is for the minister to determine the cost after assessment has been done. That's the role of the Minister of Public. So that's why it's important to go back and look at the response of the president. Now, with what members are requesting to say, the president must determine when is he, even if he calls the president here. He will not be able to answer that, because it's the Minister of Police who must tell us in terms of the law, because the president would be flouting the law if he does that. It would be very problematic for the president to do that. There is no law that gives him to stand and say this is how much I'm going to pay, even if he can agree. The law is very clear. Must be followed, he is the president of the country, must make sure that he upholds the law. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Sheikh Imam.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Let me start by asking, you know, I'm not sure what the terms of deference or mandate of this committee was. And my understanding is that ad hoc committee's responsibility is supposed to have calling witnesses, investigated, interrogated, found out who are responsible for maladministration, fraud, corruption, and that included a whole lot of people that would have been involved in the burning of this homestead in Kanda. The impression I seem to be getting here is, you know, we tend to be convicting certain individuals before we actually try them, instead of looking at it in a wide or a broader perspective. That's the problem I seem to have. And I want to just allude to something. If you look at, and this is the first time I had an opportunity to look at this report of the Public Protector. If you see, we're talking about the President, the Honorable President of the country having to pay. Then I can assure you, in terms of the report of the Public Protector, we're looking at minimal costs. We're talking about the cost in terms of the recommendation from the Public Protector is the swimming pool, the crowd, and a few items. That's basically what it is saying. Now, at the same time, I must agree that one cannot accept that the president would not have known what was going on at his house. That's totally unacceptable. Because the president admits in his response to the public protector that he's been visiting his homestead regularly, which he's been doing, so he's obviously been aware of what has been actually going on. In terms of a question, in terms of the provisional report, the president does not deny that he is willing to pay for those swimming pools and the crowd, which is after an extension of the crowd and things as well. So I'm wondering whether we should not go the route of identifying all the different people, because the total cost of this have exceeded by 155 million. That's what it's exceeded by. The 155 million, I think, is the excess amount. Now, I don't think anybody has gone and really done and actually in local inspection, which I think somebody had alluded to earlier on that we should do, and get a true account of what is the value of all the upgrades and or extensions and things that have been done there. That's the first thing. But at the same time, to ask a particular person to be held liable for all the other upgrades which or anything else other than the security would not be fair if there are other individuals that have also benefited. And I am not satisfied that a particular person may have benefited. I think there's a hell of a lot more people that have benefited in this. I don't think the value for money as far as this complex is concerned, and I'll be surprised that if you go, because the houses have originally been there. Some of them have been there. And I'll be surprised if this will come anywhere near that figure, the value of this property. Really, I don't think it would. So in light of that, I would think that maybe the route that we should be going is, yes, I agree, that we should be identifying people, we should be calling them, we should be questioning them, we should be holding them accountable and responsible, we should be getting money from them. And yes, if the president of the country is owing money, who has used money for his private use and built the crown and the swimming pool, yes, in terms of this report, it's a moral obligation that you must pay for it. So I think in terms of that, we should actually call for all the different people, especially the Department of Public Works, the architects, and everybody else that are responsible to question them and get to the bottom of it and then hold them accountable. Thank you.
Okay, the last one before we break for dinner is the Omnoy Mani. Thank you, sir. I have a difficulty in accepting the model we are adopting as a country, and I'm worried that it would seem the ANC adopted that model. It's this proposal that is on the table that politicians, the process of holding politicians to account should be challenged and not exist, for after all, politicians aren't the ones who are responsible for executing tasks. So the principle that has been established here says as follows. As Honorable Mashaka argues it so well, he says, I was the premier, other people built the house. If something goes wrong, I should not know, those people know. I was a president, a plane landed at Waterfall, I did not know, those people must account. I'm the president, I came home to discover to my horror the generosity of the people of South Africa when they gave me a pool, I did not know, those people must account. That's what we are establishing here, now, today. We are establishing a principle that says, when it happens under my nose, I did not know and therefore cannot account for it. And in fact, even if we were to say yes, I just say initial introduction, the public protector said it here. In fact, it says, my opinion is that even a minister could have had the difficulty of counter-demanding Mr. Makhanda. So in this instance, what we're establishing is that even though the president was appointed by the president, was on site by the president, if they do anything wrong, it would just direct the wrongness to that person. I have a difficulty with that as a modus operandi. It means that when we talk about corruption, politicians are immune from that accountability. Because at the end of the day, they should technically not be involved in supply chain management, technically not be involved in being able to sign checks and whatever. It's those people. It can't be. Surely if it happens under your watch, you should know and you should be the first to account.
If we really are servants of our people, if we are not, then we must remove politicians and simply say, let the administration take care of it. And when something goes right, the administration must take credit for it. And when it goes wrong, the administration must take the fault for it. But that's the principle we've established here today, and I'm concerned about it. Secondly, is that it says here that Mr. Makhanya acted as the go-between the various projects. So he was intimately involved. He said his role then became the servant of two masters, certain officials from the department. Mr. Makhanya's services were not procured by the state. They were procured by the president, and therefore he acted in the interest of the principal. Now, just a bit that I also struggle with. If we are making a point about cost and value, if I come and I find somebody driving a very expensive car, I might be able to break down the parts of that car and say, well, this car actually is only, once I've broken it down, worth 100,000, but then made R1 million for it, easy relevant. The fact of the matter is that the conclusion here is that R240 billion of taxpayers' money was not wasted. It's a cost. The money is there. That we must establish the value and whether it was value for money. Hey, our regalilo, dura. That's no problem. My problem here is that a transaction took place for R240 million. Therefore, that's the cost. The argument about the value is secondary, but the cost is established. We won't be sitting here trying to say, well, if the value is less, even the R240 million would have built on doubles in the middle of KwaZulu-Natal. The fact of the matter is that's how much was cost. That's what the taxpayers incurred for. For that money does not suddenly change in value on the basis of what was cost. The third issue here is that the FIU did the right thing by not reporting to Parliament. The FIU is accountable to the executive. So they did the right thing. That's why we only got sight of this report post the press period, because the FIU tabled the report to the executive. The public protector would have been incorrect otherwise she followed the state process, but the public protector is accountable to Parliament. That's why she did the right thing by labeling it here. So my view on this matter is that as a parliamentary body, we are now studying the work of the public protector and then considering another executive report. There could be many others that could come from the executive. That's neither here nor there. The central issue here is that if we are to not only just in words say we support the public protector, we must be willing to say when she tables that report here in this house, we must then put that report and take it seriously. So to make members of the ANC more comfortable, perhaps if you follow the same argument saying we have to take the public protector's report seriously, for it's a constitutional mandate report to Parliament, and she's done so, we can take exactly the same questions she put to the president, when she makes the argument here in the report that no response was forthcoming from the presidency. I would propose, Chairperson, that this house, I don't even have to add to the questions. We can take her questions verbatim, table them for the president, so the president can come before this committee and answer the same question. Because he did not, in fact, respond to them. So if we want to say we're a body and an arm of government that supports one organ of state against another, then we must say to the public protector, fine, we are not amending your report, we are not even wanting to find, we are simply wanting to find the information you asked for from the president. So I want to ask, Chairperson, that in fact we put this matter, I'm hoping that if we can come from dinner, we can be able to say, we must make a decision whether the president will appear here or not. This is not about singling out the president. I hold the same view with my colleagues that says, you can add to the list, you can make it as long and as short as you want. But I would hate to be part of a process that views accountability in a realm that says politicians could never be, because what happens under their watch isn't their problem. I refuse to accept that and could never be part of a process like that. Here, if I represent the Republic of South Africa in its parliament, then I must be willing to say the principal agent whose house we are discussing surely must come and account before this committee. And surely we must ask the same questions that were put before. It's not reinventing an investigation. It's only being consistent with one. And then the conclusion must be, as one
who by being complicit, by being in the house on the day President Zuma was voted, I'm assuring that I stand in the parliament that elected President Zuma. Surely I must stand in parliament that is also wanting to hold him to account. And if we refuse for that to happen, then in fact we are entering into an accountability process that is unhealthy for our democracy. Might I propose that in fact post this citizen, we put that matter front and center. It's a proposal I'm putting forward. You can add to the list, you can decorate the list. But I think principally what I'm simply asking is the accountability of the president, who's the principal agent, who something happened under his watch. I think I would take a similar view. If there was something that took place with the Minister of Housing and houses went missing or whatever took place, I would ask the same minister to come and account. Why should it be unique with the president? He's certainly not different. He certainly is an elected member, and therefore he must come to this house to come and account. And I would ask him, I plead, that we mustn't absolve him of accountability on the basis that someone else took the decision. It was his house, his department, and ultimately he must come and count here. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Members, the committee will now rise for dinner. We'll be back at almost 5 to 6. We'll be back at 10 to 7.